Views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Back to Consider This Live. That's right. It's Wednesday, February 3rd. My guests in the studio are Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism. He's my regular co-host on Wednesdays. And our special guest this afternoon is Mayor Bob Sanderson of the municipality of Port Hope. So in honor of Bob, we are going to play a quick track here, little Joni Mitchell's Night in the City. That's right. We're going to talk about what's going on in Port Hope. And hey, let's face it, it's a great place to go if you're looking for a night out in the city. Here's Joni Mitchell. Mitchell, Night in the City, right here on Northumberland 89.7. Then, welcome to the studio, gentlemen. Bob Sanderson, nice to have you here in the studio today.
It's always a pleasure, and thank you.
And Rob, how are you feeling? I know you're not feeling that great today, so...
I'm here.
You are here.
And while my voice is down about 3 octaves, it's not puberty.
Well, that's good to know.
It's good to know, right?
I'm sure your wife is happy about that. I'm going to let you kick off the questioning. We do have a question from a listener. Why don't you start with that then?
Why don't we start with this question?
Well, the question is surrounding John Street. John Street has been changed to a one-way street. People are concerned. Well, this person in particular was concerned about what consultation happens. Now it's a real rigmarole to get around the downtown area. You actually now have to go further out of her way, she says, to go to her work. And she wants to know what was done in terms of consultation with businesses. Has it affected businesses? She told me that there's a petition actually circulating now among some of the business owners on John Street as well. So what consultation was there? Was this done? There is a perception here that it was done for the benefit of the owner of the new of the former Walton Hotel to help with their development. So, again, they're looking to expand sidewalks there. Who's paying for that? Is that a taxpayer expense? A lot of questions, Bob.
Yeah, and, you know, I appreciate those questions because if you don't have the dialogue out in the open, and I think there's some areas we could have done better, but I think what I'd like to go to first of is that that street originally was a one-way street, and it has gone back and forth a couple of times. So historically, it's a one-way street, and it means it's not really broad. So cars going both ways, you know, have some difficulty, and yeah, they slow down, they're careful, but the east sidewalk is very narrow, so it's really not usable. And the bottom line is, and I think this wasn't communicated well, that ultimately what we should be looking at is what the street can become, because to me, that street can become one of the most beautiful streets in Port Hope and become a major shopping area and a major area for people to go to. If you look at the west side behind those buildings, that's where Lent Lane is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you took that whole section and you take sections in a small community and you start to develop them to beautify them, put, you know, maybe park benches in, wider sidewalks, and it becomes a very pretty lighting, then I think that's our goal. The consultation probably wasn't as strong as I thought it was. You know, you have assurance from some people that everybody had been talked to. But if you get down to the nitty-gritty, I think we need to do a better job on that consultation.
Mm-hmm.
We recently have Michelle Campbell has joined the municipality. Her role is community engagement officer and a communication manager. And I think we'll get better at doing that. If somebody agrees with you, you'll, you know, have enough consultation. If somebody disagrees with you, then you probably didn't have enough consultation.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with the listener. I think we probably did not do enough consultation or in a manner that it was visible. There was a petition. It wasn't a robust petition. It was just kind of like gathered, it seemed like, the last minute. But it was from people who were concerned about it, some business owners, some people on the street. So
mm-hmm.
we do need to make this progress in an appropriate way. We put a year moratorium on it. It's well signed. There's been no, you know, major problems that we've seen. But we're also looking at it quarterly. So when we look at it quarterly and probably over the next short period of time, I think we need to demonstrate what that street can be like and what our plans are for it, rather than just saying all of a sudden it's one way. I think we probably, you know, didn't do that part as well. So we'll go
forward. Is there greater foot traffic during the summer, you think, in that area than there would be in the wintertime, perhaps?
Well, I think there will be. I don't think there will be right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything effectively changes. I think the street's a little bit safer because there's parking only on one side. And effectively, you have parking on one side, a narrow sidewalk on the other side, and two cars are passing or trucks are delivering,
mm-hmm.
there's some challenges. And I think that will be better.
What about just eliminating parking on that street altogether then? I mean, there's a parking lot pretty much.
Well, we'd want a lot of consultation about that. I think we will learn our lessons. We're already short of parking in the sort of core. And I think that's another area we really have to look at, because if we're successfully building the downtown area, the heritage area, the Capitol Theater, the restaurants, the vibe that we want, honestly, I don't think we have enough parking. And I think hand in glove, we have to be looking at parking and some of the other amenities sort of as a package.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we already have people who, you know, will complain about parking. We have some free parking, some, you know, parking that's expensive. Our tickets are, I think, $10 you get a ticket. So some people just take the ticket and say, that's enough.
Well, it's $10 to park all day, really, when you think about it.
If you're from Toronto, it looks pretty good.
Exactly,
eh?
Right. Well, one of the other issues brought up here was the pretense of a possible conflict of interest on your part, though, being that the people will be now essentially rooted around your businesses in order to get to the one-way area of John Street. Was that something that was ever brought to your attention?
No, it's never been brought up. And secondly, I can very comfortably, you know, address that. My businesses contribute to the downtown like anybody. There's nothing in this that drives them mm-hmm. any closer or further away from me and my restaurants in any way, shape, or form. And the other thing I'd like to point out, because this is an area that could come up.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in business in a community, I think there's always the potential to have the appearance or have some people to comment that, you know, it's a self-interest. The reality is the investment that we make in a community and the people who run and try to work with the community should have an investment in the community, should have some skin in the game. But it can't be self-directed. And that's very, very clear.
Well, thank you for that response. We do have a caller online, though, so go ahead, caller.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hi.
Oh, it's Ed. How you doing, Ed?
Yeah, it's Ed White from Port Hope. I would like to ask Mayor Bob, it's getting back to the transparency and whatnot. There was a little bit of a controversy over the Yacht Club. Now, I'm not a supporter, so I am a supporter of the recreational aspect of the harbor area and whatnot. I was just wondering if you're going to possibly, depending on what you work out with the Yacht Club in the future, it's not a given one way or the other, I understand that. But I'm just wondering if it does in fact turn out that the money is saved, the 60 grand a year and 100 grand every other year, whatever it is, could that money then go to something like Parks and Rec for trails along the Ganarasca River, or perhaps improvements in the West Beach? So there's a couple of questions there, improvements to the West Beach. How's that going with Cameco and the Ring Road? And could that money be set aside for improvements to parkland and whatnot if the recreational aspect of the Yacht Club goes down?
Okay, there's a... I couldn't hear you too well, but I think I caught everything, Ed. And there's a couple of things that we can comment and questions. Let's specifically talk about the Yacht Club itself first, because I think there was some misunderstanding in that whole situation. The Yacht Club does have a lease on a building and a bit of property by the harbor. It's a five-year lease, which finished this year, and which we chose not to extend. And the five-year lease was originally put in specifically because we thought that at that point in time, the PHAI cleanup would be occurring, and we would be dealing with some dredging. The high cost of dredging right now is all we're technically dealing with, because the PHAI project is not there yet. So it really has nothing to do with them. But I think, as you alluded, $50,000 to $100,000 every other year to dredge that harbor to keep it open for a few boats is really impractical given, you know, what the mandate of our community is and where the taxpayers should go. So there are some complications moving forward, but the primary reason...
There's also a lot of misconceptions there, isn't there? Like the
I think there is too, Ed, yeah, for sure.
Doesn't the Yacht Club basically consist of 50 people, 35 boats, and only 10 locals?
Well, I don't know that number exactly, but let's differentiate the harbor from the Yacht Club.
Oh, yeah, the basin from
yeah,
the harbor. Yeah,
because the harbor is not being closed.
Right.
You know, but we can't take, you know, the keeled boats, the ones with the deep, you know, keels.
Yeah, sailboats.
Yeah. The sailboats. And if we want them to stay there beyond the lease, and our lease would, you know, dictate that we need to do that, then we would be happy to dredge the harbor. Right. And that this year would be the 50,000, not the 100. That's next year.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But so when it gets to the decision that was made, it was a five-year lease that we've decided not to renew. It's not one we canceled.
Mm-hmm.
We made every attempt, numerous attempts from September through the end of December, early January, to contact the Commodore and the Yacht Club unsuccessfully.
Right.
So we finally did send them a registered letter, which we did not get a response from for 3 weeks after that. Now we have the response, and we're actually looking forward to having dialogue and sitting down, because that's the best way to move it forward.
Well, should they not have known their lease was coming up?
Well, of course.
You know, yeah. I mean, like if you sign a five-year lease, you kind of
yeah, but
know,
but
know
like
when it
like many things, they come to the surface at the last minute whatever reason,
yeah.
And then they
yep.
have a lot of discussion around it. That's
yep.
that's not untypical.
I have a couple of questions about this. The thing that sort of interested me was the dredging. Do you not have to dredge a harbor on a regular basis anyway? I mean, is it really just for the Yacht Club, or don't you have to dredge it anyway because of the way that it's designed and the movement of the sand, et cetera, under the water?
Yeah, I'm not probably qualified to answer that totally, but I think, you know, harbor maintenance is pretty standard to
mm-hmm.
whatever level.
Mm-hmm.
Ours, unfortunately, does silt in quite quickly
mm-hmm.
because of the nature of it and because of the proximity to the river and what have you.
Yep.
So maybe we do have to do a lot more than other, you know, harbors have to do. But
well,
I think general
maintenance
is there. I understood
that some of the dredging, like there's a difference between where the dredging occurs. And again, I could be wrong too. There's three different areas. There's the basin where the yacht club is. There's the harbor general, and there's the mouth of the river. There are three different
targets, if you will.
Targets, yeah, for lack of a better word. There's three different issues there. One is for the sailboats with the big keels, and I believe the other one possibly and was rumored to be for flood control, but evidently that's not true anymore. So,
but I guess what my point is that I'm wondering, we're talking about up to $100,000 spent on a regular basis, and I'm wondering how much is actually going to be saved, because you still have to at some point dredge some part of it. So, I mean, are you going to save half of that money? Are you going to save a quarter of that money? Or does that expense totally disappear? That's, I guess, what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think for shallow-based boats, I don't think we really have to do too much. There's there's no appearance for that. All this has been for the deep-keeled boats.
Okay.
Secondly, the PHAI project will kick in at some point in time in the near future. And I think we also, from a harbor perspective, you know, the walls and the infrastructure of the harbor itself, you know, haven't been addressed for many years as well. So I think right now the yacht club is a specific issue. You know, and I think council has made a very, you know, appropriate decision not to renew the lease and spend $50,000 this year on, you know, a number of boats.
So I guess the other part of Ed's question, the supplemental, as it were, is that, okay, so if you're not spending that $50,000 on that, is that money now earmarked for things like trails along the Ganaraska?
Well, you know, it's a good question, but I don't think the budget works like you took money from one place and put it into another. I do agree, and I believe that as we go forward, that the parks and recreation, you know, should you know, be a strong budget. Where that money goes will come out of the strategic discussions. Part of those discussions, Ed, you're probably aware of them a little bit, but is going to be focused on improving the trails and the walking trails and the biking trails around the community, connecting them, giving them a better identity, giving them, you know, a real life of their own as well. It's not taking $50,000 from the harbor and putting it over there.
Yeah. No, this gets back to another thing with transparency again. After all this, you know, thing kind of blew up again, I asked a lot of questions from a lot of different people, and I'm finding out there's some really quite amazing things on the drawing board, shall we say, for, you know, for parks and rec and for, you know, the people of Port Hope. So, you know, maybe you should say a little bit more about what, you know, what might be coming, like, you know, at some of these town meetings that...
Do you think they should be publishing, like, a wish list or something?
Not necessarily a wish list. Just I understand that there's a lot of stuff in the works that's
maybe give people an update on what's
yeah,
being proposed.
Yeah, just every once in a while say, hey, look, we're looking at trails, we're looking at you know, cross country skiing, we're looking at, you know, whatever.
Sure, but here's the issue. Not to interrupt you, but
yep.
The reality is those meetings are public meetings, and we're going through them every strategy meeting in different areas, and they've been advertised, and some people show up, but not a lot of people.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know what else we can do to say this is moving.
Please don't be like Rinaldi when he says, well, we're canceling the budget meetings because nobody comes.
Well, we don't cancel any meetings. But what I am saying is this process identifying, you know, what does the community want to be like and where we should spend our money, and there's the three sort of pillars we're looking at, have been, you know, apparent and open right from the start. Our budget meetings, which are, I think, very significant, are open. We're looking at shared and common services compared to special services.
Well, maybe we've got to make them fun somehow.
Well, we might have to, but
this politics
isn't all that, all that fun. But
meeting?
To my point is, we had one person come out to the budget meeting. We're pushing that pretty hard.
Well, what about this though? I mean, how difficult would it be to put that information online? You know,
but it's all there.
If people aren't coming to the budget meetings, at least they should be able to get the information online. You're saying it's there.
It's all there.
Okay.
The best thing to get people out is do something they really don't like you to do.
Well, that gets people's interest up.
Yeah, maybe we should go out and say there's going to be a 20% tax levy increase, and everybody would show up.
So you invite everyone to a meeting about a 20% tax levy and say, oh, by the way, we're here to actually discuss what's happening with the Ganaraska.
The only thing I wanted to mention was the fact that, you know, as far as I understand, have you had any kind of feedback on the fact that the yacht club is sort of a private thing? It's not really open to the whole public, and they're getting a different kind of consideration than, say, a tap dance group or, you know.
Yeah, that hasn't been part of the dialogue, honestly, Ed. No, but I think the good thing is that, you know, at least now they've asked to meet, and we're going to meet with them.
Excellent.
Thanks,
all
Ed.
Right. Well,
thanks.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just before we move on from this, I know one of the things was that this was decided back in September in an in-camera meeting, and I wonder if that has contributed to the concern around transparency. Why would something like this be decided in camera?
Because it's a financial consideration under contract with legalities to it, and those are always going to be in camera. Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing that you bring up is that normally we would have come out of in camera mm-hmm. and announced to the public. But out of consideration for the Yacht Club and the Commodore, you know, they don't want to read in the paper or hear that this has been done and they weren't privy to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But they've got to be part of the process. So we're kind of feeling like we want to get it out there, but we're not getting the response. We want to be polite.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about transparency. It's about consideration.
Well, that's a good point. And on that note, we're going to take our first break of the hour, but we will be right back with more of Consider This Live. You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. And welcome back to The Drive Time. I'm your host, Dave Glover. With me in the studio is Mayor Bob Sanderson of the municipality of Port Hope and Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College, and we are talking about Port Hope. Now, we've talked a lot about the marina project or the marina issue down there and the yacht club. The one question that kept popping up in my head, every time I hear about this issue of the $50,000, has it ever been broached by the town or perhaps someone else to the yacht club? Well, you know what? We'll let you lease the facility, no problem. The lease can be extended, but we're not going to pick up the freight on the dredging. If you want that to happen, you're going to have to pay for that. Is that something that's been discussed at this point?
It hasn't been discussed that I know of, but certainly if we meet with them, I would expect that if it's a high cost to the taxpayer above and beyond what you do for any other taxpayer, you know, and it's kind of like a user fee,
mm-hmm.
I would say, of course we'd consider it. If you want to dredge the harbor so you can use it, or proportionate, I have no problem with that dialogue whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not unreasonable. Get another call from one of our listeners here asking about the state of emergency from a few years ago with the impeller at the water plant. The town said they were going to go after the company for costs. I just wanted an update if you could give us whatever you can on that one.
Yeah, I probably can't give you too much, although I've had a couple of discussions with the Public Works Department asking what the status is because it's gone long enough. My understanding is that there is an insurance claim and some legal discussion going on to try to find it, you know, what the problem is. Unfortunately, from what I can tell, you know, is that there's a lot of interpretation of why it occurred and what happened and you know, who's responsible. So it's probably not as clear as I wish it was, but it's ongoing. And I've just actually in the last 2 weeks asked for an update relative to both the insurance claims and what the municipal, you know, situation is currently. Yeah.
What's the status on your examination of the transit system? I know a couple of weeks back there was a report delivered to council where you were talking about a number of options you're looking at around the transit, and I'm sure it's going to be part of your upcoming budget discussions as well. What's the status on that at the moment?
Yeah, it's a good point because I think it's another area where, you know, we may not have handled as well as we'd like. I look at the budget relative to, say, all the areas that have high costs should be looked at. And unfortunately, it seemed to come out that we're looking at, you know, potentially, you know, getting rid of the transit, which I think upset a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
As a normal, you know, process, yes, it should be on the table as an option. Is it a real option? No. I think this year, you know, my wish would be really to get some information about the transit system. You know, what is the usage? How is it budgeted? What's the gas tax? You know, and we need to talk to the people who use that system. Public transit is a part of our social responsibility. You know, and I just think that if we looked at what we have, we probably can make it a bit better. Whether we save money or not, it would be nice if we did. But if we didn't, I'd like to at least see and know that it's efficient, that the people who are using it are appropriate. And served appropriately. The things we can look at are the routes we have, the hours we run, the costs that we charge. So this year, to me, you know, and I'm not council, I'm not speaking on behalf of council, but I'm encouraging council, that we do some sort of assessment and that we, you know, start to look at the high budget items to see whether or not they're serving the community, you know, efficiently. And that's mm-hmm. as simple as it is for the transit system for me.
It was interesting in the report it talked about a potential debt of about $1.7 million over I think it was about a 4 or 5 year period. Is that something that concerns you in terms of being able to finance that?
Any debt, you know, concerns me. But I think that if you look at the community needs, there's an obligation to meet some of those needs. And I think when you look at poverty, housing, other things, there's going to be costs to them. Whether that cost is in keeping, I mean, $1.7 million is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Over what time does it have to be? You know, those are things I don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things Mr. Hickey said when we spoke to him, because I actually spoke to him one day, he actually called into the studio to talk about this issue, because he said, look, you know, nobody said we're canceling it. We said it's one of the options, right? And it has to be one of the options that are on the table. Because what he said, or at least what I got from our conversation, was that people need to realize that services like this are expensive. And, you know, we will provide them if that's what the people want. But people need to know up front that this is what it's going to cost you for that service. Now, he said that having said that, now what he's trying to do anyway from conversations he's had with people is get people to wrap their head around the fact that, you know what, some essential services, and transit is for a lot of people an essential service, it's going to cost money. It's not something that you're in. It's not a for-profit operation. Sometimes there are going to be losses, but that's what happens when you provide public services, and that's what taxpayers have to be aware of because they've got to know what they're paying for, right?
We've had a lot of discussion about this, and the structure of the community means we look after everybody. You know, to what level and what cost? Somebody who never uses the bus doesn't want to pay for it. Somebody mm-hmm. who doesn't have children doesn't want to pay school tax.
Exactly.
But that's not what we are. You know, we're a community. And that community has to function at all levels. And I think the value and the, you know, of a community would be measured on how we look after our weakest elements.
Well said.
Well, it's interesting, too, because you have a very different approach than some politicians towards creating budgets. And I'm wondering if you could talk for a minute about the upcoming budget, because this would obviously play into it. You tend to look at it more in terms of bring back a budget and tell me why we need to increase it and is it justified. Maybe could you talk a bit about what's sort of on the plate right now for the current budget?
Well, we're going through our budget meetings now, and I think in the next couple of weeks, all the items that are coming forward would then be challenged and identified. We're definitely trying to get down to line-by-line items, but to your point, what I've asked each of the departments to do, you know, is look at what does it look like if you had zero growth before, like zero increase before growth? That just gives you a picture. It doesn't mean that's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But
you've got to have a baseline is what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think from that perspective, it makes the departments be very, very diligent in looking at their services rather than just saying, oh, we have 2% to play with every year and we'll build it into our budget. I do it the other way around. You have no more money mm-hmm. unless we give you more money. And every extra money that comes out has to come from the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. And every taxpayer should be able to know where the money came from, where it's going, you know, and that they should feel at some level at least that there's value for that dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So if I tell you you've got $100, you know, to spend, how do you spend it? And you come back and you say, but I have no food, that has to be addressed because that potentially isn't there. So I do like to challenge fairly hard. And then we have the discretion of a council perspective and talking with the directors and the community. So where should we spend money? We don't want to do harm. We do not want to let the service levels drop, et cetera. But we can very much, you know, look and say, well, with this picture, here's what our recommendation would be to make it better, if that's legitimately.
What are the priorities for you going forward in terms of areas of focus in the budget?
Fiscal responsibility, for sure. I mean, so the financial mm-hmm. department itself and being able to communicate clearly and transparently that budget to the citizens of the community. Second to that, we're a blended community, as everybody knows, and we've had some issues with the rural community and the urban community mm-hmm. having some feelings that there's disparity or inequity in how the taxes are done, the services. To that point, we are going through a process currently, and that's, again, open to the public, trying to identify the special services versus common services. To the point that on Thursday, we've got the ministry coming to town to, you know, present to us what the options and what the ministry perspective is and legislative. We've got impact coming as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because we really would like to then, in the end, you know, ultimately say, here's our options and here's what we can do with them. Participate with the public so that somebody in the rural community feels and understands their taxes are fair and somebody in the urban, you know, area mm-hmm. feels exactly the same.
Didn't you just have a meeting in Canton, an open house? Mm-hmm. How did that go?
I think it went very well. I wasn't able to attend, but mm-hmm. the feedback was very good. And that was specifically about understanding how services are presented in the community relative to road maintenance, et cetera.
Aren't you going back to court next week, too?
On the 12th, yes.
And
but that's the LLRW fund.
Yeah, and how's that looking at the moment?
It looks like it's going to court on the 12th.
Any comment on how you think it may turn out?
Flip a coin. Obviously, the municipality has a perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go back to what I've said all along, is that the intent of what Council Fields Agreement was intended many, many years ago, we implemented that last year. We have no intent at this point in time to change that.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we're dealing with is some citizens, two individual citizens, it's not a class action,
mm-hmm.
that feel the community may not have used the funds appropriately in keeping with that legal agreement. And the terminology, you know, that's coming out of that, you know, trust, non-trust, et cetera, it's probably complicated from a legal perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, by the time we got here, all the money had been spent and we just said, well, if we can't come to an agreement, let's let the courts decide that.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting you're saying that because, you know, this was a problem created by a previous council, but you're the council now. And so, like it or not, you have to wear it, right?
Well, it's interesting, too, because during the election campaign, I honestly thought it was a really easy thing to solve. You just come to agreement, you go, here's what we're going to do. But
well, Dave and I talked before the show, and we were going to offer I'd buy you a coffee, and Dave was going to buy Mr. Angus a coffee, and maybe you could get it solved, because I think that was what it was going to take, right?
Well, the other interesting thing, you know, and it's maybe hard to understand, but the relationship that I have with both those individuals have been good ones before, and they're still good ones now. So we don't have agreement on this particular issue,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't go past that.
We're going to take our next break here. Rob, sorry to cut you off. When we come back, we'll have more questions on that and so much more. You're listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. I'm Dave Glover. This is, as I say, Canada's only holistic political chat. And welcome back to The Drive Time. My guest in studio is Bob Sanderson, the mayor of the municipality of Port Hope. Rob Washburn, of course, professor of e-journalism. He's always my co-pilot on Wednesdays for our live rendition of Consider This Live. You're listening to Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. Have a question here about police communications. Now, recently, Coburg and Port Hope amalgamated their communications through Owen Sound. I always thought that was kind of bizarre that it took a third-party municipality to amalgamate the two communications between these communities. But anyway, but now Owen Sound is looking at the possibility of going with the OPP. So, and I realize this is sudden and probably something you're not that up to date on, but how will that affect communications for the municipalities, both Port Hope and Town of Coburg?
Yeah, it came up last night as a point of discussion at council as well, and I'll give you the same response, which is it is sudden. We don't know at this point in time, and certainly, you know, the goal will be to not take a step backwards, you know, whether it be with Owen Sound or we have to look at another alternative. Again, I think it's just come to the surface and we'll rapidly start to look at what the implication is to both communities.
Mm-hmm.
There's some efficiencies. I suspect the model can continue. You know, I think it has, you know, showed some benefits. Hard to say what Owen Sound is thinking right now about it, but
mm-hmm.
yeah.
But if they're not part of the equation, because their communications would then be through the OPP.
Mm-hmm.
That would mean that the communications, if they were to remain amalgamated between these two communities, would have to be brought back.
Well, that may be one option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There may be other options that we don't know yet. But definitely, if the current option goes away, we do have to have another one.
Right.
Yeah.
Rob, you have a question. I know you're aching to ask.
Yeah, I understand last night at council you brought in some structural changes, and I know it was last April that seven positions were eliminated, and you've had some time now to go over your municipal structure and governance model. What changes were announced last night?
A couple, and thanks for bringing it up, because I think they're important mm-hmm. changes, and not so much in line with what we had to do before with personnel, but more in line with efficiencies, structure. I guess the first thing, the driver, is that we will proceed without having a CAO, right? And that has been a question that's been asked a few times. And there are those who feel that is not a good decision and that you shouldn't go without a CAO because they do certain things. So that's number one. As a result of that, then we also have developed and are in the process of developing how council and the directors, the heads of the departments, then deal with issues that would normally be dealt with by a CAO. So it could be the hiring, the firing, the discipline, those kind of things. And we have had probably for the first time, you know, a meeting with directors and council together where we put that all on the table in a working group over a few hours. And we're very comfortable with the fact that we can run the municipality, you know, as a collaborative team effort, cooperatively between staff and council, mm-hmm. in the interest of the municipality. And we're very confident with this at this point in time. Along with that, at the same time, we're trying to ramp up the PHAI project. And I've been very involved with that for quite a while. And we're making progress in the relationship between, you know, the federal government, CNL, and the municipality.
Mm-hmm.
And there were elements there that have required a lot of negotiation, perhaps a lot of, you know, discussion. And, mm-hmm. and that's progressing well to the point that we are now going to be having a municipal team to deal with the contractual requirements, you know, of moving this project forward.
Mm-hmm.
We needed a team leader for that, a municipal team lead, understanding that PHAI is funding this portion,
mm-hmm.
because we don't have the resources of the community to deal with all the requirements.
Mm-hmm.
So Sue Bernardi, who was the director of corporate services and clerk, has assumed and will assume the role, is now has assumed by bylaw today, the role of team lead. So she is no longer in the corporate services and clerk. That requires, of course, that we fill that void immediately, legislative-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So Brian Gilmer, who has recently joined the corporation, has now been appointed as the director of corporate services and clerk. Now, if you can follow this, that whole department was general government and finances.
Mm-hmm.
So general government, now we're going to call corporate services and separate it from finances.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that will create the two departments.
Mm-hmm.
Each department then has a liaison with, you know, a counselor. And up until now, the area that we did address in those previous areas and of concern to us are the, you know, what was called the economic development tourism.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's marketing and development.
Mm-hmm.
And that department will now report into corporate services.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like an orphan before, mm-hmm. up until now.
Mm-hmm.
And communications, which we're expanding, and with Michelle Campbell and a, you know, communication manager and community engagement, will also report in there.
So is there?
So that's going to consolidate both the reporting process and responsibilities and blend and allow communications and marketing to work together closely.
The whole concept of not having a CAO is really disturbing one. I'm sure a lot of people, you look across municipalities all over the province, there are a CAO. And the CAO sort of acts as a buffer and a leader for the bureaucracy. Why is your system so much better, or why have you chosen it? Maybe that's a better question, to not have the CAO. Because usually it creates, like I said, a bit of space between the politicians and the staff, and also provides direction overall for the strategic management of the municipal bureaucracy.
Yep, I agree with you 100%, and I'll address the reasons why. First off, the CAO costs a lot of money, right? And so we do have some saving. Not that that would be something you would normally do for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing, to your point, is that yes, a CAO can be a buffer, but that buffer can be so strong you don't get things done. All right, so the CAO is the person who can make some decisions legislatively,
mm-hmm.
does run the staff,
mm-hmm.
but also has the potential to almost be obstructive.
Well, they can tend to have their own agenda, right?
Well, they can. I mean, everybody does, and I don't mind that. But if you have a working relationship, you know, and you have the CAO that you had that relationship with. We're not a huge community. So we've got 5 directors and 6 counselors. And I think the most interesting part of that is how, from a legislative perspective, do you manage appropriately and in the proper governance way, you know, in the interest of the community.
But there's a flip side to that as well, and that is that you get politicians now who have influence on municipal staff, and therefore their agenda becomes the one that may become predominant. Now, everybody works in good faith. I mean, that's fine. But if somebody gets a bee in their bonnet or wants to start to take on more than maybe is there within their parameters or in the best interests of the municipality, that can create its own set of problems as well.
Sure,
yes?
But that's always been the case. I mean, councillors have always interfered. Right, so well, I don't know that that's going to go away because you have a CAO. The CAO was probably the person who would try to, you know.
But isn't that a sort of a personality thing, though? I mean, depending on the type of CAO that you have, I mean, not all CAOs are like that, and some are very good at doing their jobs and that are non-obtrusive. So why is it so important that you take that position out?
Because I think we can manage it better. I think the model is a better one. The other thing is that there's there's not a plethora of CAOs out there mm-hmm. that would have the credentials and requirements that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And some municipalities choose to not have a CAO after you look at what a CAO does, mm-hmm. and maybe has a business manager or a, mm-hmm. you know, something you know described differently. We had an executive director for a short period.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the difference for a lot of people is that there's a perception that there's an arm's length relationship with the CAO. That yeah, they, but their job is to maintain what is commonly referred to as the permanent government, right? I mean, you have the permanent government, which is the government that does all of the mechanics of making things work. You know, your directors, the staff. And then you have what a lot of people refer to as the provisional government, which is people like yourself, councillors, who are there, some for long time, some for short periods of time. But in order to maintain the mechanism of governance, you've got to have this other mechanism, which is what the CAO's role really is, so to sort of keep things going smoothly and to have that sort of arm's length, if you will, reasonable or culpable deniability, if you will, from what the mayor's agenda might be, you know?
But it doesn't always work either.
Okay.
All right. So ideally, yes, it would be nice to have somebody in that role that did all the things that you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Port Hope has not had that happen in years, you know. And so I think, and the council thinks, and I think the directors support it as well, everybody does, that we have a fairly collaborative approach with some definition and some requirements, you know, code of conduct, et cetera, that says each director is – They're well paid, they're totally qualified, and they can run their department, and that the direction of that department is given by council.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then the assigned counselor is the liaison between the director
mm-hmm.
and council. So if there's any questions or whatever, you know, you didn't understand what we had, we weren't very clear, or, you know, there's things that council should know, it's a two-way street with the liaison person. And that means there's no barrier. You don't have to go to the CAO and say, could I talk to a director?
Mm-hmm.
Because before, it's all, you only talk to me and you don't talk to anybody else. Directors, do not talk to council, only talk to the CAO. That's fraught with problems unto itself. As you say, if you had the appropriate CAO or the structure, it might work fine too.
Mm-hmm.
But our structure is very collaborative, very open. I think this year will be a very interesting year from that perspective. And the other thing it's done is there's very clear and open dialogue between the directors now as well. So I'm very, very confident in the way we're going. This is quite brilliant, actually.
Well, it's fine for maybe this group of people.
Yeah, but exactly. That was my next question. Yeah. What does that mean for the guy who gets elected mayor the next time?
I was just going to say, if people get
replaced. You mean it's going to be somebody different?
You never know, Bob.
I know.
But, you know, I mean, is this leaving a hole in the bureaucracy for the next municipal government, though?
Well, and it's a good question because we've discussed that, too. And if you set the structure up well, like many organizations, mm-hmm. and it's robust over time, mm-hmm. you know, then it's sustainable. Right, so it does depend on the people, but it also depends on being consistent and making it work over a period of time. And if it does work, there's a lot of reluctance to vary it because you lose a lot. All of a sudden, directors not talking to each other well, council's not talking to each other well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to us to make sure it works. And also, from your perspective and mine, there's going to be succession, particularly in politics. There always is. You know, so that is something else that needs to be brought in. But then it'll become part of the electoral process. The people who are candidates who want to run will understand what they're running for and why, and it's going to be different than it was 4 years ago.
I'm not going to mention any names, but having covered municipal politics for almost all of my 30 years, I've met some politicians who have very strong agendas, very pig-headed, and the bureaucracy just can't barely work with these people. Yeah. And I mean, we know that there are those personalities out there. They do get elected, and you know, it can be fraught the other way. So I think it's an amazing experiment, and I guess we'll just have to see how it all unfolds. I have another question, though. I'd like to move on and talk a bit about the county. I know that there was recently a meeting between Port Hope Council and the county transportation people in regards to a lot of what's going on. Could you bring us up to date on what's happening there?
Yep. Well, the transportation master plan for the county involves, you know, all the mm-hmm. constituents, the four municipalities. It's work in progress. It's not finalized.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, and we are participating in that, by the way. I've been to the meetings, a couple of councillors have been. And the presentation that the county did last night was kind of an update. And it's also asking for and trying to assure people that there's still room for input. Mm-hmm. They've tended to focus on Port Hope as a community and some of the things they're proposing in that area. And I think they did a good job. I mean, it's a long-term planning process relative to, you know, road maintenance, but also traffic management, I think, as much as anything. And there's some discussion about, you know, should this be a county road, should this be a municipal road, et cetera.
Well, I want to thank you for that. I know that Lou Rinaldi has mentioned on the show when I talked to him that that's something the provincial government is looking at, too, for rural Ontario, is transportation so that everybody can have some access to some form of public transportation. I want to thank you for coming in, Bob. I really appreciate it. The hour went by like that, really quickly, as it always does here on Consider This Live. I want to thank Rob Washburn for being here every week, as he is, and you, the listeners, for calling us and for sending us messages and tweets. Always appreciate your input. And thanks again, Bob. We will have you back sometime soon, I hope. Coming up, Bob Dylan. This is because, again, this is a whole new way of governance for the town of Port Hope, from the sounds of it. Here's Bob Dylan's Times They Are Changing. We'll be stick around, by the way. The Cedar Rail Show is coming up afterwards. Thanks for being
Dave.
Here. Bye-bye, folks.
Thank you.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing. Come writers and critics who prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win, for the time.